This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427JOY949 or email onair at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday the 16th of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we speak to leader of the Reason Party, Fiona Patten, who has condemned the Liberal Party's support of the so-called Nordic model of regulating sex work in Victoria, which was passed at the Liberal Party State Conference. Calling for a review of the legislation in Victoria, with calls to look at the decriminalisation that exists in the ACT and New South Wales. We find out about Midsummer Pathways, a new professional development program by Victoria's Queer Arts and Culture Festival for queer artists living with disabilities. And we look at what it means when our queer culture is celebrated in a convention, as we speak to Australians who attended RuPaul's Drag Con on the weekend and find out not only what the event is like, but what it means for our identity.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email onair at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The Victorian Liberal Party have passed a motion to support the Nordic model of sex work regulation in Victoria, which has seen sex workers and advocates speak out, saying that employing the Nordic model would be a step in the wrong direction. The Nordic model criminalises paying for sex, but does not criminalise the sex worker, which would mean that in Victoria, buying sex, pimping, and keeping a brothel would all be against the law should this be made law. Currently in Victoria, it is only illegal for clients to solicit sex in a public place. The act itself is not illegal. Dean Arcuri spoke with Reason Party founder and member of the Victorian Legislative Council for the Northern Metropolitan Region, Fiona Patten, who has called for an audit of the Liberal Party's support for the Nordic model in Victoria.
The current sex worker laws that we have in Victoria are anything but current. They were initially introduced in 1986, so they are out of touch with the realities of the 21st century, such as things like the internet. However, they have successfully established a legal industry for brothels and escort agencies, and to a degree, they have set up a relatively safe place for sex workers to work individually. That said, though, I feel that that's an area that we desperately need to address. So we need reform, but it is established, legal, licensed industry that has been running for over 3 decades.
The Liberal Party in Victoria have put forward support for the so-called Nordic model of regulating sex work at the party state conference. But what does that actually mean? The Nordic model, which was first introduced by the Swedish government in the 90s and later by Canada and Northern Ireland, criminalises paying for sex but doesn't criminalise the sex worker. So why is this something that Victorian sex workers and advocates are standing up against? Advocates such as Reason Party founder and member of the Victorian Legislative Council for the Northern Metropolitan Region, Fiona Patten, who is also the first former sex worker to be elected to Parliament in Australia. It's because it would attempt to criminalise consensual sex, because buying sex or even keeping a brothel would then be against the law, something Patten feels would not be helping to meet the needs of the industry, but instead create a separative narrative between sex workers and everyone else in the state.
They're definitely kowtowing to some religious right that has used left-wing, feminist, separatist policy, which is bizarre. you know, I mean, when was the last time you imagined sort of a, you know, right-wing liberal to be agreeing with left-wing feminist separatists? It's a very odd marriage. But their proposal will close down the legal industry in Victoria. Now, we have a burgeoning illegal industry already, and this will just add to that.
So, what are the smart changes that can be made on a political level when it comes to sex worker legislation in Victoria? Changes that could secure and support not only the industry that already exists, but the individuals that work within it and use these services.
Politically, it is always hard, and as I have said for decades, it is always hard to talk about sex in Parliament, whether it's sex work, whether it's sex education, whether it's same-sex marriage. Politicians find it very difficult to pronounce that word. However, we do need to review our sex worker laws. I think we should be moving to decriminalisation. We should be treating sex work like any other work. We should ensure that there are health and safety measures in place to protect workers and customers, and planning measures to to ensure that businesses don't disrupt other businesses or residents. But apart from that, that's really where the government should back out. Our role, as I say, should be in health and safety and planning. And I think we should treat sex work as sex work, as just that work. And yes, the decriminalisation model that we've seen in the ACT, that we've seen in New South Wales, and that we've seen in New Zealand. I think we should be looking to those jurisdictions for guidance.
There's a high level of stigma and miscommunication when it comes to sex workers within our society. And even the notion of the implementation of the Nordic model has seen many within the industry speak out at the negative effects it would have on their livelihoods. It's time we take a hard look at the realities of sex workers in our society, instead of creating greater stigma towards those that would work within the industry and those that employ their services.
The Nordic model is disastrous. While they say that they're paying heed to sex workers, what they are doing is pushing sex workers to work illegally and underground. You know, the rhetoric that we hear from not just Liberal, but certainly we've heard it from some Greens candidates and Greens members as well. The rhetoric that we hear is, oh, no, we're going to decriminalise the worker. She won't or he won't get into trouble. It'll just be the client. When you criminalise the client, you're criminalising the worker. And, yes, it has led, as we've seen in countries where it has been introduced in Europe, it has led to greater violence against sex workers. It has led to, you know, unhealthy work areas, probably led to less safer sex practices. So it's been an absolute disaster. And on top of that, the stigma and the discrimination that sex workers already experience is just further exacerbated by this type of legislation.
Patton has called on the Liberal Party State Director Michael Kroger to conduct a straw poll amongst Liberal MPs, office holders and even rank-and-file members of the party as to whether they have ever used the services of a sex worker. She's done this to try and highlight the hypocrisy that exists within the party and the narrative surrounding sex workers and those that use their services. I wonder what the result would be. International health and human rights agencies, including Amnesty International, World Health Organization, Global Alliance Against Trafficking in Women, and Human Rights Watch, have all concluded that criminalizing sex work and related activities threatens sex worker health, safety, and rights. Victorian sex worker laws are outdated. They need to be reviewed and updated instead of enacting a model within the state that stigmatizes, alienates, and damages the industry and those working within it. Patton hopes that her continued calls spur people both in and out of Parliament into action and supports Victoria's sex worker industry as well as protects those that work within it and use its services.
I think the Liberal Party in passing this policy, yeah, they've got a woman problem, and we know that. I mean, there's just barely any women in their party, and the ones that are there are leaving in droves. But, you know, it's interesting because so many of the men who probably voted for this have at one time in their life been a client of a sex worker. Now, they seem to consider being the client of a sex worker as a rite of passage, as something that is acceptable, but being a sex worker is something that is not acceptable, and, you know, we must, you know, that these poor women are victims of their own circumstances, but no a woman would voluntarily have sex for money, and that somehow all women who work in the industry have been subjugated in one way or another and have been forced in there. And if they were of the right mind, they'd, you know, they'd get out of the industry and become lawyers. You know, I think the fact that the Liberals have raised this is of great concern. But what I would call on the government to do now is to take up the industry's call, sex workers' calls, my calls, to review the legislation from a whole of government perspective. Let's get the police involved. Let's get the Attorney General's involved. Let's get planning. Let's get health involved. And let's develop a model of sex worker regulation that treats sex workers as workers and does not treat them any differently, ensures the health and safety of the industry, reduces stigma, and will obviously be a decriminalisation model that suits the 21st century working experience.
That was Dean Arcuri with Fiona Patton, founder of the Reason Party and member of the Victorian Legislative Council for the Northern Metropolitan Region.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
In 2017, Melbourne's Queer Arts and Culture Festival, Midsummer, launched Midsummer Futures, a development and mentoring program focused on bringing together a diverse range of early career artists and culture makers who are looking to forge their cultural and artistic voices. Midsummer Futures included professional mentoring, peer support, and workshops to assist participants further developing their practice. While reception to the program was an undeniable success, it was quickly identified that for some in our LGBTIQA+ communities, who also identify as living with a disability, had barriers, both perceived and actual, that were preventing them from confidently engaging with the program. It was time for that to change, and this year, the Midsummer Festival have launched Midsummer Pathways, a new professional development program for queer artists living with disabilities. Dean Arcuri spoke with Midsummer Festival Chief Executive Karen Bryant to find out more.
Seeing a need to reach out and create stronger engagement with artists living with disabilities in our communities, the team at Midsummer Festival have launched Midsummer Pathways, a new professional development program for queer artists living with disabilities. Midsummer Pathways specifically focuses on creating avenues for them, not only allowing room for their creative practice, but allowing them to learn and engage in a supportive environment for queer people with disabilities. Within our communities, this is something that we often forget about, thinking that creating a more accessible space for people living with disabilities means not having stairs in a venue or making sure there's a disabled bathroom. But that just isn't the case. Making the effort to create room for LGBTIQA+ people living with disabilities in what already exists is so very important. And Midsummer Pathways is a fantastic initiative. I spoke with Midsummer Chief Executive Karen Bryant to find out how Midsummer Pathways came about, the importance of doing it, and the ways in which Midsummer is continuing to create pathways to engage with specific groups within our broader, diverse LGBTIQA+ communities.
A couple of different ways. One is we really do have a commitment to development and support projects, so we're doing them in lots of different ways. And one of the things that we started last year was a mentorship program called Futures, which we were, you know, inundated with applications from early career artists and, you know, creatives. And we did have a large number of applicants who were from the disability sector. We know that there are large members of our community who participate in events that live with disability, and we just found that there was a real lack of opportunity for a lot of those people living with disability to have, you know, had experiences and had training, and so they're, you know, and you could see that in their applications, and they were looking for sort of different, I guess, different support and different development needs. And so we've got a really strong disability focus elsewhere in the program, and we had an opportunity to have a chat to DHHS, and Pathways was born.
Identifying and isolating the parts of our communities that require specific support isn't a new concept at Midsummer. Being an open access festival, when you add your performance into the program, a lot of effort is put into making sure producers and performers alike understand what it means to create and engage with inclusive practices for disabled LGBTIQA+ members of our communities, both on stage, behind the scenes, and in the audience. From her experience spearheading these initiatives, I asked Karen what it means for a person living with disabilities within our communities. and what else can and is being done to ensure that beyond the performers themselves, everyone can comfortably be a part of celebrating Melbourne's queer culture.
A lot of people just, I think, out of sight, out of mind, they don't think about the fact that 20% of our population generally identify as having some sort of disability. That's a large number of people. And we have large members of our community that do, or they have neighbours or friends or family members. And we really wanted to make sure that we really are a festival. We talk a lot about Midsummer being inclusive. We wanted to make sure it really was in all shapes and forms. And that doesn't just mean making sure a venue is wheelchair accessible, which so many people kind of go tick. We really wanted to be engaging with, you know, all sectors of the community. And we've done that sort of intersectionality in many different ways as well throughout, I guess, all of Midsummer over the last couple of years. It was interesting. It was just a couple of conversations. I actually came to Midsummer wanting to make sure there was a disability program. I think one of the earliest conversations I had with Dan when he came on board as program manager, he said, I want to do stuff with disability. You know, amongst others, it's, you know, it's certainly not just one stream, but we all just genuinely believed in accessibility across so many different ways. And disability is one of those things. A lot of people do live with barriers and it's taking them away. But also focusing on the ability or the abilities that people have, you know, and that they're living with disability, but they have so much to give. And in fact, all of our staff are learning Auslan at the moment and we're having a lot of fun.
Having an initiative such as Midsummer Pathways is not only new, but fantastic. Creating the initiative is one thing. Actually reaching out to disabled members of our communities who have often felt isolated or that they're dismissed is another. For those who are interested but hesitant or unsure if Midsummer Pathways is for them, how can they find out more?
We've been getting lots of phone calls. I'd say give us a call, look us on the website. There's always somebody in the office that's really happy to have a chat. Or on our website, we've got information on pathways in, you know, in Auslan. On, you know, there are so many different ways that we've looked at how audio description, large text. So we've tried to also make it that anybody who wants to get information can get their information in a way that's going to be easy for them. And that means a variety of formats. But also, you know, just make contact with us. However is easier and for them, because we'd love to chat to people about it.
Applications for Midsummer Pathways are open until the 31st of May. If you're interested, you can apply online by heading to the Midsummer website, or you can contact John at programming@midsummer.org.au or by phoning 9296 6600 to get a plain text version of the questions in the form and further information to discuss Midsummer Pathways.
That was Dina Curie with Midsummer Chief Executive Karen Bryant discussing Midsummer Pathways, a new professional development program for queer artists living with disabilities. You can find out more about Midsummer Pathways by heading to midsummer.org.au.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Spearheaded by RuPaul and World of Wonder, RuPaul's Drag Con was this past weekend over 3 days in Los Angeles, and it provided a platform for fans of all ages and backgrounds to meet and interact with world-renowned celebrities and icons in a creative, friendly, and accessible environment. But what does that actually mean? While it sits under the heading of drag, it's also a big celebration of the part of queer culture and identity that exists in our world right now. Drag and drag race have seen an elevation in the past decade that has become a strong part of the queer narrative. So what does that mean when its elements also sit in a convention that people can come and visit? RuPaul's Drag Con celebrates all colours of the rainbow, and Dina Curie investigated what having a queer con like this means by speaking to some of the Aussies that headed to Drag Con LA.
Conventions and expos, they're something you normally associate with businesses or science fiction fans, but actually, they're for anyone who wants to engage, explore and celebrate what's on offer. The third RuPaul's Drag Con took place on the weekend in Los Angeles, and it got me wondering, what is a drag convention actually like? Is it a celebration of what it means to be queer, or a great chance to sell wigs and makeup, or is it just a place to meet your favourite drag race queens, or maybe... is it all of these things? Recovering after 3 days of DragCon, I had a chat with Australian photographer Joel Devereaux and entertainer Polly Filler, who were in LA on the weekend, to find out exactly what it was like to celebrate our queer culture in this way at RuPaul's DragCon.
ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome to the stage the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3, Miss Trixie Mattel!
Know you're sexy and keep slaying the game. Don't the world remember your name? Feel your... You said puss.
Oh, God, how do I explain it? Obviously, there are lots of people here in drag. But then there were lots of, like, kids. Like, we've seen, like, five-year-old... We saw, like, a five-year-old Dolly Parton and a seven-year-old Cher with their mum. Like, Drag Race over here is almost like a family thing as well. There were so many kids here, and there was a whole, like, a kids area, which is kind of funny, but when, like, you have a wig shop and then next door are, like, a bunch of porn stars dancing on a jockstrap. But it's like Ben de la Creme said in one of the panels we went to, they're like, this is the con for anyone who has ever felt like a complete outsider or a reject. Like, everyone's here. There's all the drag queens, and then there's, like, kids with their parents, and then there's, like, old ladies wearing wigs. There's so many people walking around, like, just wearing wigs. Nothing else. Well, apart from clothes, of course.
I thought it was a great experience. Still quite a convention in that sense, but it was just a migration of people with mutual interest, which is always good. Friendly. Everyone's very friendly.
Let your body lose control, a kitty girl.
Like, some people literally have a booth, which is, like, a little booth with a table, and that's it. Some people have rented these massive, like, booths, and, like, you line up, and the first part of the booth is, like, the merch, and then you go through, like, a little door or curtain, and they're kind of in, like, a box with their set and their lighting and everything, and they sit and do, like, hi, how are you? And you take your photo, and then they get spit out the back. Most queens don't really charge for meet and greet. It's kind of like, you know, buy some of my merch and you can take a photo and meet me for free.
It was kind of strange because, like, the drag was a huge part of it, but, like, a lot of the vendors and stuff, like, they had people vending soap there and things, and then, like, accessories and, like, little bunnies and stuff and, like, just, like, queer interest things. And, like, of course there was, like, alcohol there too, so that's a queer interest. But it was kind of under the umbrella of drag.
Oh, my God. Seriously, you should see all the muscle daddies walking around, like, in just undies and Del Monte harnesses. It's like the lead rolled in House of Priscilla and then covered themselves in Del Montes. It's insane.
To me, that's the best part. Like, the people I met this weekend, like, friends who just you're now familiar with and can say hi to, whether you travel around. Like, we met so many people. Like, we're traveling to Seattle next week, and now we know people there because of the convention. And none of them are, like, Drag Race related, but we just kind of have that familiarity. When you are dressed up, you do kind of command more of an attention, and when you see other people who are, it kind of marries that nicely. Yeah. So little freaks being friends with freaks.
Hey, kitty girl, it's your world. This is when you guys sing too. When you walk the street, step into the beat. Hey, kitty girl, get your twirl. Get the disco heat.
When people found out we're from Australia, we just got so much love. People were just commenting, going, oh, my God, I love your outfit. Oh, my God.
It was kind of like an all-or-nothing situation. Like, the people who were dressed up were dressed up to, like, crazy levels. Like, I knew so many people from Instagram who you were familiar with, and they just looked amazing. But then a lot of it was fans. Like, 99% of people lining up to meet the queens were all just in plain clothes with, like, their drag T-shirt and stuff. But the people who were dressed were pretty dressed. Like, the girls are great. Girls' makeup was fab. But, yeah, the queens who were ready, like, they were getting photos with everyone. Like, we got asked for a ton of photos each day, especially on, like, the middle day when I was blue. That was quite popular with people. And we like that kind of thing. Like, we, Ruby and I, like to be more of a friend, not a fan to people. Like, the only person we lined up and saw was Sasha. And that was on the Friday where we got, like, early access for a little bit. So we didn't have to line up as long because we don't like to queue. But, yeah, everyone was pretty dressed.
I don't get nervous. I was shaking when I did my makeup because I did, because, you know, if there's going to be a more judgmental crowd, it's going to be a convention full of drag queens who have been on RuPaul's Drag Race, right? Well, you know, we're going to get judged. Do you know what? Nothing could be further from the truth. Everyone is, I mean, there have been so many busted queens here and no one cares. Everyone It's literally everyone say love. It's the most positive thing you can ever do. It's really cool. If you're a fan of Drag Race or drag, just, like, if you can come, because it's going to be quite amazing.
Like kitty girl, it's your world. When you walk the street, step into the beat. Hey, kitty girl, get your twirl. In the disco heat,
so it sounds like DragCon can be whatever you want it to be, which I guess we're going to find out, with RuPaul Charles announcing in his keynote speech that RuPaul's DragCon will be coming to Australia in 2019, with people speculating that it's heading to Sydney before next year's Mardi Gras. Though, if you can't wait that long, Queer Expo's happening in Melbourne at the end of June, giving the flavour of the US convention its own Aussie twist. You can find out what it's like yourself with Drag Race Queens and more. Drag Race has certainly elevated the art form of drag to the mainstream over the past decade. And now we have to sit with what that means within our culture and identity in both queer and non-queer expression. As something that was used to bunk convention and celebrate non-conforming expression evolves into something more.
That was Dean Arcuri with Joel Devereaux and Polly Filler looking back on RuPaul's Drag Con over the weekend.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at any time at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.